Welcome to the meditation exercise. Let's begin by practicing the meditation. Sit in a chair. If you can find a straight back chair, that would be good. But if you can't, then any chair will do. Sofa will do. If you're not feeling well and you're bed bound, then it's okay to lay in bed. But if you can, you find a straight back chair. Put your right hand by your side. As I said before, you can have your hand in your lap or your hands in your lap. But if you can, put your hand by your side. Close your eyes. Become aware of your hand. Notice your hand. Notice how it becomes a little bit tingly when you pay attention to it. And as you continue to pay attention to your hand, you can feel the life flowing into it. You can be aware of one finger at a time. For example, notice your first finger. Feel your first finger. Sense your first finger. Notice it becomes a little tingly when you pay attention to it. Now, notice your second finger. Feel your second finger. You know where your second finger is without images. You can sense where it is. It becomes a little bit tingly as you pay attention to it. Notice your third finger in the same way. Your fourth finger. You can notice one finger at a time. It helps to focus your attention on your hand. Or you can simply be aware of your hand, noticing your hand. As you notice your hand, you also, of course, have your eyes closed. And as if you were looking out through the middle of your forehead, as if you were looking out into space, and you see little particles of light, little pixels of light, little sparkles of light as you look at the inside of your forehead with your mind's eye. Now you're anchored in the present. You see the little particles of light, the little glow of light, little patterns of light, and you're also aware of your hand. And you become calm. Your breathing becomes different because you're not under stress. Now you are connected with your inner ground, and you're flowing from the inner ground. And what flows from the inner ground flows through your being. And you can feel the warmth. You can actually feel the warmth flow down through your arm into your hand, into your whole body. Continue to practice the meditation exercise as I speak. The meditation is very simple, and it becomes simpler as you practice it. One thing that can happen is that after people have practiced it for a while, they no longer feel the initial relief that they get. Remember when you first started, if you've been practicing for a while, you remember how when you first started it was such a relief. But then the relief factor wears off, and then some people begin to have doubts, begin to think, well, is this working? Nothing seems to be happening, and so on. Just realize that those doubts are always there. They will be there to try to dampen your use of the meditation. Those doubts are always there whenever you want to do the right thing, or whenever you have a noble thought, or when you want to meditate, the doubts are there. Just observe the doubt, let it pass. Don't try to struggle with it. Don't fight it. Just see it. Stand back. Observe it. Watch it. Stare at it. It will pass. Just let it pass. Continue to do your meditation. Look at the little particles as you look out the inside of your forehead, as if you were looking out in space through the middle of your forehead. You see little particles of light. It's actually spiritual light. You're actually standing back and observing the spiritual light, which floods your being. This light is from your Creator. His light is shed upon the universe. The earthly sun creates light, light for the plants and for the flowers. It has light in it and warmth in it, and the plants blossom and thrive in the sunlight. In a similar way, God provides spiritual light for your soul, and you blossom in it. It's good for you, and it contains everything. It contains everything you will need. It contains motivation, insight, peace of mind, warmth, love, security, things to move toward. It contains the things that will bring you joy and delight and purpose as you begin to discover the reason for your existence. It's all there within. So now, continue to practice your meditation. And as you do, as you sit quietly and are aware of your hand, you see the little particles of light on the inside of your eyelids, actually, also. You can actually do it that way. Remember what I said, it becomes simpler and simpler. The meditation is simply a way of standing back from thought so you're not immersed in thought and lost in thought. Thoughts that come from the outside that are not even your thoughts, but you tend to become immersed in them and follow them and think they're your thoughts and are ruled by them. Now you can stand back. Now your soul, when it stands back, is subject to God, and all things are subject to the Creator. And you will discover that simply standing back in God's light provides a mysterious power for good to happen, for bad to stay out, and for good things to happen. And no matter what happens to you from now on, it's all for the good. It says in the Bible that all things serve good for those who love the Lord. So even if something bad seems to happen, it'll end up with a good result. You'll learn something from it. Or it'll seem bad, but then it leads to something good. You see what I mean? It's very mysterious. Everything God does is magic. There's magic in everything that He does, and there's magic in His light also, in which you now participate, in which you now live and thrive and move and have your being. Simply by doing this little meditation. Don't add any other techniques. Just keep it simple. And then everything that is needed will come from God and not from the hand of man. You may now open your eyes if you like and continue to listen to my voice if you like. I'm now going to offer some tips to help you preserve the meditative life. Some little tips that I have gleaned along the way, and I offer them because they will be of some help, undoubtedly, to you. Now let's start with the first thing that I would like to talk about, and that is a very simple way of remembering to do what you know in your heart. When someone's pressuring you, or when they're mean, or when they're cruel, or when they're bossy, here's the thing. Let's say, and here's an example. Let's say that you're a young person, a teenager, and your mom tells you to take the garbage out, but she says it in a very mean way. She says it in such a mean and bossy way that you don't want to do it. You feel like rebelling. Here's the secret. Let a heartbeat go by and check with your intuition. Check with what you know in your heart, what you wordlessly know. So let a heartbeat go by. Check with your intuition. And if you can see that it's the right thing to do, or the wise thing to do, or a kind thing you could do, then go ahead and do it. Not because she's bossing you, but because you see that it's wise. See what I mean? Let's say you're driving somewhere and there's a flagman there, and the flagman points to you and directs you in a certain direction in a very mean way. Well, You might in the past have felt like rebelling. But now you let a heartbeat go by, you check with your intuition, and you see that it's the wise thing to do, it's the right thing to do. Never mind whether he was mean or what have you. It was the wise thing to do, you see? So from now on, you must do everything based upon what you see is right, what you see is wise, what you see is fair, what you see is just, what you see is common sense. Do it for that reason, not in rebellion against what someone tells you to do and not mindlessly following what they tell you to do. And not because you're resentful and you resent them and then you feel guilty for resentment, so you do it out of guilt. You see what I mean? You can always check with your intuition. And then it may seem to them that you're obeying them or doing what they are asking you to do because you're just doing what they want. But in your heart, you know that you're doing it because you see that it's wise. So you're actually following your intuition. You're obeying your intuition. This is a very important point. Always obey your intuition. Intuition first, last, and always. Never mind what other people think. And if someone pressures you to do something and you see that it's not wise to do so or somehow it's not right, then just don't do it. Just don't do it. Let them think what they will. If they pressure you and challenge you and tease you, but it doesn't seem like the right thing to do, then don't do it. If you're in school and they're pressuring you, then just go through the motions. Just go through the motions. Do the best you can, and if it's not good enough for them, then that's just too bad. That's their problem. Just do what you can. Okay? All right. Now, I want to say something about speaking up. If you're like most people, you've been too repressed your whole life. You've been repressed because when you were a little child, if you told the truth, people didn't like it. And they slapped you around and told you to. They tried to make you doubt yourself, and they didn't want to hear what you had to say. Or they wouldn't give you the space to say it, and they pressured you, and you became tongue-tied. And you undoubtedly started to repress. And you became subject to them through this repression. And now you have a lifelong habit of repressing and not speaking up, not saying what needs to be said sometimes. So you have a right to express yourself. But the problem is that you have so much suppressed anger from having repressed all these years. Now often what's happened is when you did try to speak up, a lot of anger came out. It made you look bad, and then you thought you were wrong for speaking up, but it was just for the anger. So now you must separate the anger. So from now on, speak up. Speak up about little things. You know, if you're standing in line and somebody cuts in front of you, say, "Excuse me, I was here first." Say it right away. Don't let anger and resentment build up. Just say it right away. "Excuse me, I was here first." Okay, see how simple that is? If someone pressures you to do something, say, "No, thank you." If you're at work and they try to make you do some work that's not your work, say, "Well, it's not my work. I've got my own work. No, thank you." See, just keep it real simple. Now, sometimes when you speak up, anger will come out. Anger will come out. Then what you do is say, "Well, I'm sorry about the anger, but I'm still right about what I said." See? "I'm sorry about the anger, but I'm still right about what I said." Now, of course, if you suddenly discover that what you said wasn't right, and you were out of order, perhaps, and all right, then you can say, "Well, you know, it turns out you were right. I'm sorry. I apologize." That's fair. But most of the time, things that need to be said should be said. So say them. Just take the anger and the resentment out of it. And if anger comes out, say, "I'm sorry about the anger, but I'm still right about what I said." Okay? Now, of course, we can't always speak up. If you're working somewhere, you don't want to go in and tell your boss off. Well, you'll get fired if you need the job. So you have to use discretion. But if you're like most people, you've been way too repressed. And so you have to begin practicing. That's right. Just begin practicing. You'll see that it works. People will respect you. Some will like it and some won't, but never mind. At least you will have spoken the truth and cleared the air. Don't look for support from other people. You know, a lot of men look for support from their wife. Or when they have something to do, they look for support. See what's wise, see what's right, and then just do it because you see that it's wise. Don't try to change other people. That's a mistake. It's always a mistake to try to change other people because it's an act of willfulness, see? And Christ one time said, "Of myself I can do nothing." He said, "It is a Father within me who doth the works." So realize that of yourself you can do nothing. If anything good is going to happen, it's going to be because this inner light, this truth for which you now stand, and which you now walk in. See, if you are motivated to say something by the truth or to do a kindness for someone, you sense that it's the right thing to do or the right thing to say, then it'll all come out right. But if you If your ego gets involved and your ego jumps in and tries to make something happen, then you see that ruins it. So you've got to be more spontaneous, but just realize that you can't do a lot for people. But the only thing you can do for someone is occasionally lend a little helping hand, but not too much. And you can sometimes speak a word of truth, a timely word of truth that comes spontaneously without your ego having dredged it up. It just comes out. It can be a very, very cogent force and be helpful to another person. But it can't be something that you dredge up. It just has to come about through your closeness to your intuition. And then it'll be good. As you go through life, you're going to discover a new way of dealing with people. It'll come from within. You'll begin to see how a father should be and how a mother should be and so on. No one has to teach you. You'll discover it as you go. And yes, you'll make some little mistakes along the way. God permits us to make mistakes. So there's a little bit of trial and error involved. Because, you see, up until now, everything you've done has been all backwards and upside down and wrong. You reacted, and then you did something out of a reaction. You became angry, you did something out of anger, or out of guilt, or out of resentment. So you were always doing something in reaction to something, instead of flowing from within. And what you did then was motivated by your ego. Your ego was trying to prove something. Your ego was trying to show somebody something. Your ego was trying to make itself look good or trying to change other people. Your ego was always trying to do something. You were playing God, in other words. Now you will cease and desist doing that. And the energy with which you moved was always the wrong energy. It was impatience, or it was anger, or it was false love, false compassion. And so it was always wrong. And it didn't have a good effect on other people. Sometimes they ran away because they could sense that it wasn't pure. Now you'll go about your life living simply, and you will begin to discover the measure of giving and the measure of receiving. And you'll begin to discover your proper obligations. Not obligations that people laid upon you, but what you see is wise and what you see is right in the light. Everything will change for the better, and it's going to take time, perhaps lots of time, okay? Because you have to discover a whole new way of relating to people and relating to food and relating to objects and possessions. Everything has a value. Food has a value. Sex has a value. Possessions have a value. Money has a value. Everything has a value. Recreation. But you must find the proper measure of it. And don't look to other people. Don't look to experts and books. And don't look to anyone. Look within. You will discover intuitively, and you will be taught by your Creator. You will develop wisdom and timing and grace and patience and boldness and courage. And you will develop them all naturally. They will just come forth, and you will be, actually, you'll be amazed. You'll be amazed, and you'll realize that it's not of you. It's of the light in which you now stand. And all you have to do is continue to do the little meditation, and then just watch and see what happens. Just do the meditation. That's all you have to do. And every time it'll be different. It's never a compulsive thing. See, God sets us free. Christ said, "Who the Son of Man sets free is free indeed." So you're free to do the meditation. You don't have to do it. It's not an obligation. It's not a compulsion. You're free to do it as a free will offering and then to reap the benefits of having done it for no other reason than because you want to know the truth. You want to know the truth, and you want to be a better person, not to impress anyone, not to make up for the past, for no other reason than you simply want to do what's right and know what's true. Now, continue to do your meditation every day. Don't stop. Keep doing it, and life will be good. There is a razor's edge between discerning and judging. It's okay to discern wrong, to discern error. If someone is doing something in error, it's okay to see it. But don't judge them. In other words, take the little pinch of resentment out. There's a razor's edge difference between discerning and judging, but it's very, very important. You must learn how to go through life, seeing what you see. When you were a little child, often you weren't allowed to see what you see. You weren't allowed to see what you see. But now you have to see what you see. And when you see it, that's innocent. You're simply discerning. Just take the little pinch of resentment out. See your family in a new way. In the past, you judged them. And then the next day, you saw your family with the eyes of yesterday. Now you must look at your family with fresh eyes every day. Fresh eyes. People change for the better. But if you continue to judge them for what they did in the past and see them in the light of the past, even if they change, you may not see it. It's very important to see people with fresh eyes. You may have to go it alone for a while after you've begun your meditation. You'll find this new way. You'll need a little time to get to know yourself and to learn this new way of relating to everything in the God's light of truth. Some friends that you thought were your friends will fall away because all they did was support your old way of existence. Then for a while, you may be alone, but then you will discover new friends, finer friends, and more noble friends. But from now on, you can't be buddy-buddy and super emotional with people anymore, because all that does is support the old you, the old way of life, the ego life. Now you must find a new way of relating to people. So don't get me wrong. You can be friendly and do a kindness for people and so on, but just not so close, not so emotional, because the emotions support your ego as you were and support them as they are and doesn't permit them to change and doesn't permit you to change. So be in the world, but not of the world, as Christ said. You must learn how to be in the world, but not of the world. So you can still be a mom, a dad, a brother, a sister, a husband, a wife, a friend, a worker, a neighbor. And you can be friendly with people and do kindnesses for them and so on. But now, with a little bit of mental distance, appreciate people without liking them unduly. See their errors without hating them. You owe no allegiance to any man. Your only allegiance is to what you know is right in your heart. If someone is good, then you can see that they're good, but don't like them because they're good. Simply see that they're good. And if someone is decent or fair or honorable, then you can cooperate with them in some activity. But if someone is not decent, if they're not good, if they're not fair, if they're not honorable, if they're deceitful, then see that, and you probably will have to keep your distance from them. But don't be a belonger, joining all kinds of clubs and groups and organizations and religions, because when you do, see, it says in the Bible, God said, I am a jealous God. You need to reserve your emotions and your love for your Creator, and you belong to Him. You must learn to belong to your Creator in His kingdom. And so, of course, you can go to work somewhere, of course, although you'd be better off undoubtedly starting your own business. But it's okay to go to work somewhere. It's okay to do things with other people to earn a living and so on. But don't go off and join a lot of groups because they want a piece of you. And they will. They will own a piece of you. You will give part of yourself to them in exchange for their support and their approval. And when you belong to them, then they feel like they own you. Okay? So everything must work for you. No longer must you work and slave away for other things. Things must work for you and work for the good for which you stand. Your possessions have a value. But if you use your possessions to build your ego or to support your ego, then they will own you. What you own will own you. So you must have your possessions, they're proper. It's okay to have possessions, it's okay to have money. God wants you to have things, proper things. He wants you to be happy. But just don't make things too important. Don't make friendship too important. Don't make people too important. Don't make anything more important than what you know in your heart is right. So you must learn how to relate to everything in such a way that it doesn't support your ego. You see, if you like something, you like it because it reflects good feelings back to you, or you like something because it makes you feel good, like God. That's the old ego way. Or if you hate something, it's because it doesn't make you feel good. It doesn't support your pride. It doesn't support your ego. You see what I mean? It doesn't see you in a good light. It doesn't make you feel good. So you must learn to relate to things in a very simple way. You heard the old question, do you eat to live or do you live to eat? Well, it's okay to eat to live. And it's okay to enjoy the taste of the food, but just a modest pleasure. A modest pleasure in sports and activities, and a modest pleasure in music, and a modest pleasure in work, and a modest pleasure in food. Not too much. There's a stopping place, you know, where you eat to provide nourishment for your body and enjoy what pleasure is built into it by our good Lord. But then there's a place where you stop, where you don't overeat, where you don't overindulge. You see what I mean? It's the same with everything. You must learn how to relate to food, to sex, to people, to work, to your possessions. You must learn how to relate to everything properly so that you don't use it to serve your ego, to prop your ego up, so that you don't use it as an escape, which also serves your ego. See? In the past, you used food as an escape and as a comfort. We ought to be looking to our Creator for comfort and not escaping from what we need to see. Learn the magic of patient observation. It's amazing how the principle of patiently observing people and things and situations and even our own illnesses and issues, patiently observing them. There's a magic in it. In the past, you always rolled up your sleeves and tried to make something happen. You tried to make people bow to your will, or you tried to change them, or you became angry at your own body if something wasn't quite right. You became angry at things. You looked at your family with the judgment of yesterday, and you pressured them, and you were impatient with them. You wanted them to change. You wanted them to support your ego. You wanted them to see you as a nice person. So you became a people pleaser. Now you must see that you must learn how to stand back and observe people, observe situations, observe everything patiently with a little bit of mental distance. There's some kind of magic that comes through that. There's something that comes through observation in the light. I'll give you a couple of examples. If you try to think of a pink elephant, then it disappears. When you stare at that image of the pink elephant, it disappears. The light dissolves it. When you hang up a dirty towel out in the sunlight, it doesn't take very long before it becomes fresh and clean. Somehow the sunlight has magically made it fresh. There's a magic in God's light. And through you simply being a vehicle of yourself, you can do nothing but just watching patiently. There's even a value in that you're no longer straining and striving and struggling and stressing yourself to try to make something happen and to worry. See, they're all self-serving. They all serve your ego. But if you let go and let God, as the expression goes, and patiently observe, it's amazing how many things clear themselves up, clean themselves up. Issues go away or are solved mysteriously. Or you see, after patiently observing, you see some little thing you can do, and it solves it. So not only do things take care of themselves, and things get better without your ego struggling, without your ego striving, without your ego trying and huffing and puffing and trying to make things happen and playing God again, you see. So it's humbling to see things get better and improve without your meddling. But it's also good. It's all part of learning to be a patient observer in life. As I've always said, you must learn to go through life as if you were a tourist, observing things, seeing people and things, and observing them, and marveling at everything you see and wondering about it, I'm not trying to figure everything out, not trying to change everything, not having a confrontational attitude or an attitude of trying to analyze everything. Just simply observe, like when you were a little child. When you were a little child, you saw things and you knew things wordlessly, quietly in your heart. You must learn to be as Christ said. You must become as a little child again. And go through life with a discerning attitude, an attitude of no attitude, of simply watching, observing, and then watch the magic happen.